If you brought your Bibles and want to turn back to our scripture reading from earlier, turn to John chapter 10. John chapter 10, and we will be there in just 1 minute. Want to update you on a member of our staff. Mr. Cameron Frazier has informed us of his decision that he would like to focus more of his attention to his work at Good Pasture. So we are regrettably giving in and letting him go ahead and step down as our worship leader. He is going to still be with us for 2 more weeks, so you'll have 2 more Sundays to tell him how much you love him, how much you appreciate him. I've sat through a lot. My favorite worship leader growing up was Kevin Kilpatrick. It was the son of Wayne Kilpatrick. He's probably number one in my book. Second to that is probably Cameron. I love to hear Cameron sing. He's very talented. We're going to miss you. We understand, he's got a lot of endeavors right now, a lot of things going. But again, we're sad to see you leave. But if you have a chance to tell Cameron how much you love him and appreciate him, you've got 2 more weeks. His last Sunday with us will be Sunday, July the 9th. We'll just enjoy you for the next 2 weeks and just soak it up. So again, if you have a chance to tell him thank you and how much you appreciate him, do so over the next couple of weeks. We're going to finish up this morning in John chapter 10 with looking at this idea of living a no-regrets life. So many times in life, we find ourselves looking back, wishing we had done something different. We look back and wished, maybe I wish I would have saved more money, or I wish I would have, taken better care of myself. I've heard people say all the time, if I knew that I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself when I was younger. Now, there's all these things that we do in life, but one of the things that we do the most is we tend to look back and have regrets. What if we could live our life in such a way that we did not have any regrets? One of the things we've been looking at over the last few weeks is this idea from Psalm 90, verse 12, that where God is encouraging us, commanding us, teaching us to number our days so that we can gain a heart of wisdom, so that we can understand how important it is to live each and every day to its fullest. And that's exactly what John chapter 10 is talking about in verse 10. I came that you might have life and live it to the full, is what the NIV says. A different translation has said that you might have an abundant life. Well, what does that look like? What does that abundant life look like? Is it the American dream that we are sold as we grow up in this culture, that it's pursuit of fame and fortune and pleasure and all? Is that the life to the full? Is that the abundant life? Or is it something different? Well, one of the neat things we're going to do this morning is to go back and look at the life of Christ. And we're going to take 4 snapshots into his life and take these, and we're going to look at them and hopefully help us understand what it looks like to live with no regrets, to live life to the full, to live an abundant life. And again, if life on this earth is truly a temporary thing for us, which I think we understand it is, and the things that we've been looking at are the idea of to live like we're dying, to love like we've been forgiven, and to really truly this morning live a life of no regrets. Now this is fun, but it's also deep at the same time. Because the struggle is, I think many of us live with good intentions. I think we wake up in the morning and we wake up with good intentions of being good people. We decide that we're going to wake up this morning and we're going to try to live for Christ, and we have these good intentions. But the problem with good intentions is they usually don't pan out. A lot of people have a good intention to save money, but the problem is they don't really have a plan, and they don't take each moment and each decision and apply that good intention. The difference between good intentions and intentional living is drastic. Jesus didn't live with good intentions. He lived an intentional life. In other words, every step, every thought, every breath, every word was uttered with this intentionality of fulfilling his Father's purpose for his life. It ultimately leads to a life of no regrets. So I want us to look at this a little bit this morning. We're going to start right here in John chapter 10. We're going to be in Luke 7. We're going to be in a couple other passages that deal with Jesus' life. But I want us to look at this because I would imagine most of us want to, at the end of our temporary time on this earth, be able to look back and have no regrets. So how do we do that? Well, the first thing that we see in Jesus' life right here in John chapter 10 is this idea of having life and having life to the full. So the first thing that I want us to look at is this idea of living passionately. If we are going to have a life of no regrets, we're going to have to live life to the full. Absolutely to the full. Now, when we are born as young children, as young people here on this earth, we are extremely adventurous. We have no fear of pain. We have no fear of consequences. We just run and play and have a great time. I mean, we are just wild Indians running from here to there to everywhere. We don't have any care or concern of what might happen to us. We're just adventurous. We're excitable. If you were in here for VBS a couple of weeks ago, if you were in here listening to those kids scream so they could win the spirit stick, all of us who were over the age of 30 had to step out of the auditorium because it was that loud. They had no care in the world. They wanted to be as loud as they could and as wild as they could because they wanted to win an award. And they didn't care because they were having fun and it was exciting. And it was, man, it just filled them with such enthusiasm. Well, we move from that stage to the adolescent years where we begin to learn that there are consequences, there is pain, there is discomfort. And then what ends up happening is we begin to learn that if we don't like pain and we don't like discomfort, we begin to focus on living our life so that we can create a comfortable lifestyle. So we go from being created as these wonderfully beautiful people who are created in the image of God, who've got all this excitement and adventurous spirit and all of this just passion for life. And before you know it, by the time we're in our, mid to late 20s, mid to late 30s, all of a sudden we become these people who no longer live with passion, but we're constantly trying to find comfort. We're concerned about feeling good. We're concerned about keeping things the same. We're concerned about creating a little box that we can live in. And as long as we're in that box and everything feels right and seems right, and there's this sense of security. Well, here's the problem. Jesus didn't come so that we could have a comfortable life. He didn't come so that we could have an easy life. He came so that we could have the abundant life, or life to the full, a passion-filled life full of adventure, trying to be like Jesus. I can't imagine what it would have been like to be around Jesus or walk with Jesus or just be one of his close followers. But I can tell you this, it was probably not filled with comfort. In fact, it was probably filled with things that scared the disciples. They were on the boat in the Sea of Galilee, and there were storms, and they're fearful, and they're walking places, and they have thousands of people following them, and how are we going to feed them? And it was just an amazing adventure being a follower of Jesus. Jesus didn't go around, and the disciples didn't go around trying to figure out ways to create comfort. They lived, and truly lived. Helen Keller is somebody that I know you've heard of and you maybe even studied before. She's a unique, unique, unique woman who gives so much encouragement. And to realize what kind of life that she lived and to realize some of the things that she said this. She said, security, being comfortable, security is mostly a superstition. In other words, it doesn't exist. Not in our own making. In fact, she went on to say, life is either a daring adventure or nothing at all. Life is either a daring adventure. One of the things that we talked about on a Wednesday night not too long ago, back when we were still having classes, is this idea of look at trying to be a follower of Jesus and obey Jesus as a great adventure. Of not knowing where it's going to lead you, but it's going to lead you into some amazing events, and it's going to lead you through some amazing struggles. But what you realize is when you obey God and you follow Jesus, it's an adventure. It's not comfortable, it's not easy, it's not boring, it's passion-filled, adventure-filled life. And it's one of the greatest ways that we can learn to live with no regrets. Notice Luke chapter 7. I want you to see this picture again from Jesus' life, Luke chapter 7. I want you to notice what we have laid out before us here, beginning in verse 31. To whom then shall I compare the people of this generation? And what are they like? They are like children. Notice the comparison, the illustration. They are like children sitting in the marketplace, and they're calling to one another. And notice this. We played the flute for you, and you did not dance. We sang a dirge, and you did not weep. In other words, there's a classification of people who have become numb to life. You played a flute and you did not dance. You didn't get excited. It didn't stir up any emotion. It didn't create you to get excited. We also, notice this, sang a dirge, and it didn't create this remorseful weeping. In fact, you were able to be in the presence of this, and you were absolutely numb to life. How many of us have become so comfortable in our comfort zones that now we're numb? We're numb to the influence of the Spirit on our life. We're numb to the little nudges of our conscience saying, hey, do this, try that. We're numb to the possibility of joy. We're numb to the possibility of excitement and passion-filled living. We're just numb to life. We don't get excited. We don't get upset. We're just lukewarm. Now, when you go back and you study the seven churches of Asia in Revelation, what does God say about the church that is neither hot nor cold? What does he say that he's going to do with that church? What does he say, church? He's going to do what? Spew it out. I don't want any of us to live a life that when we get to the end of this life, we were never really excited about anything. We never got upset about anything. We just lived comfortably numb lives. There was no sense of adventure. There was no sense of passion. There was no sense of purpose in being a follower of Jesus. When we begin to understand that we can number our days and realize that we don't have forever to live, and that we can take whatever time that we have left and live it with passion and zeal and excitement and wonder, it will lead to a no regrets life. I want you to notice the second thing right here in the life of Jesus, and that is found in John 13. Not only must we live passionately, but we must love completely. We must love completely. There's a beautiful passage here in John 13 that I want you to see in verse 1, but also in Psalm 119 and verse 32. In Psalm 119 and verse 32, I can remember as about, I was in the fifth grade, and me and one of my friends, his parents got a lake house just north of Tuscaloosa on the Black Warrior River. And it's one of the very few times that I enjoyed going to that side of the state, if you know why. Getting close to Tuscaloosa. Inside joke. Anyways, Auburn fans unite around the fact that we don't go to West Vance. Anyways, we went and we were on the lake, and his dad had a boat, and he bought two jet skis, wave runners. Well, the problem is, you know, he was about to put two fifth grade boys out on jet skis. We didn't care how dangerous it was. We didn't care what was going to happen. We were just ready to jump on them full throttle and have some fun. Well, about that same time, it was the early part of summer, they were doing a water safety class at the marina across from us on the lake. So his dad decided, hey, I'm going to take these two young pups, going to go over here, they're going to learn how to ride a wave runner. Well, unbeknownst to my friend's father, the person who was putting on this class had created an obstacle course to teach you how to ride a wave runner. And he had mapped out an obstacle course, and there were a couple of different sandbars there, because the Black Warrior River is much like the Old Hickory Lake. It basically swelled out of the banks of a river, so there was lots of different elevation change and depth change and all that kind of stuff in the water. If you didn't know where you were going, you could get in trouble. But we got over there, and he said, here's what I want you guys to do. I want you guys to open up the throttle all the way. Me and my friend looked at each other and said, yes. Open it up all the way, but here's the secret. You've got to stay in my wake, because I've set up this obstacle course. And as long as you stay in my wake, you'll avoid some of the buoys. You're going to avoid some of the sandbars. And I began thinking to myself, now wait a minute, here I am as an 11, 12-year-old kid. I'm about to open this thing wide open. So I asked, I said, how fast will this thing go? He said, 30 to 35 miles an hour. I began thinking, maybe this isn't such a good idea. But sure enough, we set out, and he took out in front of us. My friend was behind him. I was behind my friend. And sure enough, wide open, full throttle, flying around out here on this lake. As long as we followed in his wake, we were fine. My friend decided he wanted to go on his own. He ran the thing up on a beach. Sand got all stuck up in the jet motor. His dad got all over him. And he said, if you would only have followed in the wake of the instructor, you'd have been okay. Psalm 119, verse 32, a beautiful verse. If you will run in the path of God's command. Here's the beautiful thing about living passionately and loving completely. If we will follow the example of Christ, if we will run in the path of Jesus, if we will run in the path of God's commands, if we will run in the pathway of Scripture, we will find a life that there really is no regrets because we're loving people completely and we're living passionately. But I want you to notice John 13. John 13, beginning in verse 1, you see right here, now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart. Jesus came to this earth and he lived as somebody who was dying because he knew at a young age of 11 or 12 why he was here. He must be about his Father's business. So it's a beautiful example for us to look at. What does it look like to live a life when you realize you're dying? Jesus came to this earth for a specific purpose, but I want you to see what happens. Notice this. He knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Now, I love the NIV here better. The latter part of the NIV, he now showed them the full extent of his what? Of his love. Here's the thing about loving completely. One of the things that I think all human beings struggle with is placing unrealistic expectations on other people. We place unrealistic expectations on other people, specifically the people that we love. And if those people will live up to our expectations, then we can love them. Here's the beauty about what's going on right here in John 13. In John 13, you're about to see for the next six chapters, the final hours of Jesus' life on this earth. The disciples right here at this point are still wrestling with what does it mean that Jesus is going to be leaving? What does it mean that your kingdom is going to come? What do you mean that you're going to have an earthly kingdom or a spiritual kingdom? They still didn't understand all the ins and outs. They were fighting over who was going to be the best, who was going to be the greatest. They still missed the boat there at the feast of the Passover there, right before Jesus was going to be crucified, and they're just sitting there and not serving one another. They were missing everything, but yet Jesus didn't have this unrealistic expectations on his disciples that they had to get it all figured out before he could show them the full extent of his love. He was willing to love them completely because he knew his time was limited here on this earth. How many times do we find ourselves wanting people, if people will just believe this way, think this way, act this way, if they'll just vote the way I vote, if they'll just see the things the way that I see things, if the principals at school, the teachers at school would just do this, if the church would just do this, and all you end up seeing is that if the whole world around you would just see the way you see, and there's this unrealistic expectation that that will ever happen because it won't, then we could love them. The amazing thing, when we're faced with the final few days on this earth, the things that we focus on and the unrealistic expectations that we place on people all of a sudden go away. Because we realize that those things really don't matter. That really what matters are relationships and people. Why do we wait to get to this point in our life? Why is it that we have to wait until we find out that we're not going to be here very long? Until we get to the point where we want to live with purpose And we want to love people completely. How do we do this? How do we love people completely? You say it right now. You say it right now. In fact, I'm going to give you a chance to the person who's sitting next to you right now. I want you to say this. Say, I love you. Let's say it together to the person next to you. I love you. How'd that sound? Did you make the person sitting next to you feel weird? Let's do it again. Look to the person to whichever side you want to go. Say it again. I love you. You say it now. Let's do this together as a church. God, I love you. Let's say it together. God, I love you. Man, if we're going to love completely, you say it now. You don't wait. You know the old saying, honey, I love you, and if I ever change my mind, I'll let you know. That's not biblical. It also doesn't work well for ladies, does it? No, you say it now. Man, you go home today and you write a letter to a loved one that you want to tell them how much you love them. You leave here and you pick up the phone and you call a parent or you call a friend and you say, you know what? I'm going to live different. I love you, man. I love you so much. I'm so grateful for you. You say it now. You don't wait. I tried to help some of these guys that are still single sitting next to some pretty girls just then. Say it now. But you don't just say it now, you show it now. You give up things for people now. You're willing right now to look at your calendar and you know what? I'm going to show my family how much I love them. I'm going to make sure that they know that they're a priority in my life. You don't just say it now, you don't just show it now, you share it now. You share your love. How do you do that? You share your time, you share your treasures, you share your resource. You share everything you've got because you want people to know that you love them. Because guess what? All those things are things you can't take with you. You can't take time with you. You can't take your treasures with you. Why do we wait to get to this point? Why do we wait to focus on Psalm 90 verse 12 and James 4 and verse 14 and all the different passages that challenge us and challenge our thinking to live like we're dying, to realize that time on this earth is very fleeting? Why do we wait until that point in time when we're left with just a few days, months, or years to live to get to this point? What if we got there right now? What if the challenge to live like you're dying was not a challenge, but it was a lifestyle? Where you were going to start taking risk again. You were going to step out of the boat. Think about Peter. The risk that Peter took because he wanted to be where Jesus was. Guess what? We cannot be where Jesus is and stay where we are. We have to get out of our comfort zones. We have to get out of the boat. We have to do this third thing, and that is this. We have to learn humbly. We have not arrived. I want you to notice another snapshot from Jesus' life, and it's Paul looking back at it, but I want you to see this. Notice Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2, beginning in verse 5. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men, and being found in human form, he humbled himself. And I want you to notice what Paul says here. He humbled himself, notice this, by becoming obedient. He humbled himself by becoming obedient. There's one of the ways that he humbled himself. Notice this, but it wasn't just obedient. He humbled himself by becoming obedient even to the point of death. And he doesn't just stop there. Even death on a what? On a cross. Jesus was willing to empty himself. The Son of God, who was perfect, emptied himself. And he wrestled with that a little bit, but he still emptied himself. If we are going to live a life with no regrets, we're going to have to live with adventure and passion and throw caution to the wind and follow Jesus wherever that leads us. Whatever that means we have to give up, whatever changes that means we have to make, we make them because we're adventurously following Jesus. and we love completely. We stop putting these unrealistic expectations on people. You can love people so much better when you don't have selfish, unrealistic expectations on people. And we begin to realize that we have not arrived. And we're willing to learn. We're willing to learn through struggles. You think about what Jesus dealt with. He was willing to become obedient. Obedient to death. Obedient to death on the cross. There's going to be times where we struggle, but we can still learn through those experiences. And I want you to notice the last one. And that is this idea of leaving boldly. Most of us, I would think all of us, want to live a life that outlasts ourselves. We would love to think that the people that are going to be left on this earth after we're gone that knew us would miss us and love us. And we would love to live our lives in such a way that people would think highly of us. I want you to notice another passage. Look at Luke chapter 9. Luke chapter 9, verse 51. When the days drew near for him to be taken up, again, the final days of his life. Notice this. He set his face to go to Jerusalem. Again, I love the NIV better here. He resolutely set out for Jerusalem. He resolutely set out for Jerusalem. He knew his time had come. He knew that it was about time for him to be crucified, to be killed, to be sacrificed for my sin and for your sin. And yet, he turned his face to Jerusalem and he resolutely set out, boldly proclaiming to fulfill the purpose that God has sent him for. How do we leave boldly? Well, one of the things we have to learn is to stop buying in to the lies that our culture sells us. What is the American dream? What do y'all think it is? It is to what? Own your what? Own your own home. Probably used to be what it is. Here's the thing about living in our culture, and it's probably across the world. Our culture focuses on building sandcastles in the sand. That's what we focus on. We focus on a career, it's a sandcastle in the sand. We focus on a house, it's a sandcastle in the sand. It's bricks and sticks and mortar, it's not going to last. That retirement account that we keep funding over and over and over again, it's sandcastles in the sand. This building, the bricks and the mortar and the lights and the pews and the carpet and the furniture, guess what? It means absolutely nothing to God. Nothing. 100 years from now, when all this stuff is gone, guess what's going to remain? The church or the building? What do you think? The church. What if we stopped building sandcastles in the sand and we started living intentional lives for Jesus? Where the adventure became not building some sandcastle, but the adventure became living like Jesus. Getting out of our comfort zone. Feeling things again. I want to ask you to do something this morning. I want you to look into your heart. And I'm not talking about just this surface stuff. I'm asking you to look down deep into your heart. Look into the corners of your heart where you kind of push things back, hurt and pain, rejection, private thoughts and private sin. And I want you to ask yourself this. As you look down deep into your heart, are you at peace with God? Are you at peace with other people? As you look down deep inside of your heart, are there things that need to be dealt with? Many of y'all are going to remember the movie The Bucket List with Jack Nicholson and Morgan Freeman. Both of them are facing terminal illnesses. They decide to come up with a list of things they want to go do. They go to Mount Everest. They go to all these different places. But what's the one thing that Jack Nicholson struggles with the most in doing? The one thing that he saves for almost the very end, what is it? He's making things right with his daughter. He's reconciling a relationship. When we get to the end of this life, whether it's now, next week, or next month, very rarely do people have regrets about not making more money or working more or acquiring more or having more toys or having more sandcastles in the sand. The regrets that we end up having are really about relationships. Wish I'd invested more in my family, in my children, in my friends, in my loved ones. I wish that my relationship with God had been better. Why wait until you've only got a few weeks left to be adventurous? Why wait until you got a few months left to start loving? Why wait until you're right there facing the last few hours of your life that you begin to focus on being humble? Why don't we decide this morning to step out of the boat and truly live a life of no regrets? What if we took a challenge and we said, you know what, no longer is this going to be a teach us to number our days challenge. It's teach us to number our days lifestyle. That we lived every day like it was our last. That we lived every moment as if we had been forgiven and we can't wait to forgive other people. We can't wait to love on other people. Here's the thing about looking down deep into your heart. It reveals what you're really and truly most focused on. Whatever you get the most upset about, whatever bothers you the most, it really shows you what you're focused on. If you get bothered so much by political stuff, that's what you're focused on. If you get bothered so much because people just don't see things the way you do, that's what you're focused on. What if every single one of us decided this morning that our focus is going to be on Jesus and living the life that he has given us to the full and removing these unrealistic expectations on people and loving them completely, and that we'll step off this high horse that we get on and that we can learn humbly who it is that Jesus has called us to be, so that when we get to the end of this life, we leave it in such a way that the relationships and everything that we've invested in outlast us. As you look into your heart this morning, if there's sin, I want to encourage you to confess it. If you've never become a follower and you're ready to confess Jesus as your Lord, why wait? Why wait? Peter wanted to get out of that boat because he wanted to get to Jesus. How many of us need to get out of the pew so that we can get to Jesus? If you need to come, won't you do it while we stand and sing?